It's time for overtime.
And I know just the guy to talk to.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Tell me more, tell me more.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
It's hour number two of overtime on a Tuesday edition of the show. Minnesota Vikings Thursday moved up this week. We got the full hour for you wherever you can find your podcast, ESPNSiouxFalls.com, and on the free ESPN Sioux Falls mobile app. Special thanks, as always, to Dustin Baker, Stone Baker in studio, joining us in hour number one. It's hour number two on the way. Headlines and highlights. Latest from the NHL. Several coaching hires have been made. Also, an interesting wrinkle to a trade request from one Dylan Larkin. We'll dive into that and more. Also, NBA chatter, where the Spurs defied not massive odds. They were only 2.5-point underdogs in Vegas last night, but they find a way to win game three. And it was not all sunshine and rainbows throughout. A physical slugfest, and the Spurs prove up to the task last night in a 115-111 finals. Spurs prolong the series to at least five games after a game three victory. We'll take a look at the game four odds, series odds, and more storylines and news from the NBA in the middle of hour number two. We finish up the show with NFL chatter, latest from the league, as well as the good, the bad, and the ugly before we are done. Let's dive right into the scorecard. We start with the NBA last night. It was a three-pronged attack for San Antonio. Several different impactful players last night. Wemby had 32, 8, and 6. The team shot 46%, only turned it over eight times. Stephon Castle had 23, but De'Aaron Fox made a lot of big buckets late. And here's Fox himself talking about the importance of last night's win for the Spurs.
Every game we've played, I think we've had the bigger lead in all these games, and it's the big thing is, you know, how can we sustain the way that we're playing? I think in the first half, we've come out, we've hit first. You know, they've responded, and sometimes we didn't respond well, but we kind of kept the games close. But I think tonight we responded well to their run. They had a big run in the first half. They get up at halftime, and we're, you know, thinking to ourselves, how can we get back to playing the way that we were playing, with the ball moving, with getting stops, not giving up offensive rebounds, not turning the ball over. And whenever we were able to do that, I think that's why we were able to, one, get back into the game, and two, kind of grow our lead and finish the game off.
NBA Finals Game 3 goes the way of the visiting San Antonio Spurs. For those of you keeping score at home, that means that road teams now 3-0 to start the 2026 NBA Finals. Head coach Mitch Johnson of San Antonio on Wemby's performance last night.
I'm sure Victor has numerous sources of motivation, and I don't think any of us are surprised or would expect anything different than a strong performance and him being on his front foot in terms of being in attack mode. You know, for me and the staff, our job is to help the guys. There's no momentum. There's no carryover. We learn what we saw and experienced from the previous game, and now plural. When you get into series, you got to settle in, and the clarity that comes from watching the tape and arguing with your staff and trying to help the guys is the job. And that's what we'll continue to do, and we'll have the same approach in the next 48 hours.
Now talking about the team that lost last night, the New York Knicks, obviously a big letdown in front of a raucous home crowd, president included, everybody on their feet, amazing stuff, great energy for the ball game. They found a way to lose last night. New York was down 11 after one quarter, found their way back into the game. Good ball game across the board, but still come up short, 115-111. What went wrong last night for New York? Here is Brian Windhorst on the Knicks offense, coming out a little bit too stagnant last night.
Obviously, the Spurs are make things tough, but the second half, six assists as a team.
The Knicks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Brunson, four turnovers, mm-hmm. two assists, four turnovers in the second half, six assists as a team. Iman Shumpert, our colleague here, was talking about this to me last night. He's watching, and because the ball stays on one side of the court, right, even when the Spurs are in disadvantageous matchups, they can correct it. For example, what the Knicks want is they want Wembanyama over to the corner so he can get out of the way. Well, Brunson's holding the ball for so long that Wembanyama's able to switch out of it and get it so slow that he's able to get back into his position to defend that spot. And so not only is it just about getting Towns the ball, it's letting the Spurs set their defense.
That's Brian Windhorst on the New York Knicks. You know, we lauded the performance of Karl Anthony Towns through the first two games. Alan Hahn going right after Kat post-game last night. You just got to be better.
First of all, you let Wemby off the hook because, like, he was kicking his butt in the first two games. And what did they do? They said, well, Wemby can't handle Kat, so let's get him off him. That's a win for you, Kat. Like, you just won that. You made them change their defense and say 100%. The other team's star center can't guard you, which is what Kat said walking off the floor in San Antonio after game two.
Right.
This guy's got nothing for me. And so instead of now using that to empower you into now I'm going to dominate the 6'6 guy guarding to me, he went down to the post and didn't want the ball. And there were times that offense did struggle because he didn't want the ball. And that was a problem. Engage is the exact word. He needs to be engaged in game four, no matter who the hell's guarding him.
That's Alan Hahn of ESPN New York. Game four looming on Wednesday night. Spurs and the Knicks from MSG again. 7:30 on ABC. Knicks lead it 2-1. They're a 2.5-point favorite, just like they were in game three. Same spread for game four coming up tomorrow night. More from Windhorst here. The game four winner. Will that winner win the series?
Of all the series that I've ever covered, typically in this situation, I would agree with you. The way this series has gone, particularly the fact that it would become a three-game series if the Spurs win it with home court, I would say yes, because obviously I don't think the Knicks lose in three in a row. But because of the home court thing, I got to step back. I'm having a hard time figuring this out. I'm having a hard time figuring out whether the Knicks is an easy fix for the Knicks to tighten themselves back up, whether this is existential. I'm not there yet.
That's Brian Windhorst on the importance of Game 4. That looms on Wednesday night, 7:30 on ABC. Over to the NHL. Stanley Cup Final Game 4 is tonight from Vegas. Canes at Golden Knights, 7 o'clock on ABC. Carolina marginally favored on the road in Game 4, minus 115 as of this morning at DraftKings Sportsbook. A light slate yesterday in Major League Baseball for our area teams. Extra innings affair in Cleveland where the Guardians lost to the Yankees 7-5. Cleveland falls to 37-31. And then Milwaukee wins an absurdly high-scoring contest in West Sacramento against the A's. In 12 innings, the Brewers won 15-14. A new record for the Brew Crew, 41-23. Today and tonight, Twins return to the mound in Detroit. 5:40 is the start time. 5 o'clock, pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Other matchups on the way, Yankees at Guardians, Cardinals at Mets, White Sox host the Braves, Royals home to the Rangers, Cubs at Rockies, Brewers at the A's, the nightcap at 9:05. Over to the National Football League. Let's talk about the Baker Mayfield contract stalemate, standoff, impasse, whatever adjective you want to put on it right now. It ain't good between the Buccaneers and Baker Mayfield. Here's Adam Schefter, who says, frankly, he is pretty darn surprised that it's reached this point.
Daniel Jones agreed to a deal, a two-year $88 million contract that could be worth up to $100 million. So somewhere between 44 and 50. And he's coming off a torn Achilles. So is he as healthy as Baker? No. Has he been as productive as Ben? No. No. So you would think that that would be the market on Baker Mayfield, somewhere right in there, just north of there. Shouldn't be a hard deal to get done. Not close right now. And Baker says that if the deal's not done by training camp, he's not doing the deal, which means that they would tag him after the season. But it doesn't seem right now, and these things change quick. The deal is close.
That's it for the NFL for now. Speaking of somebody who might play in the NFL someday, Brendan Sorsby. That decision still very much ablaze in the world of college football and college sports broadly. Paul Feinbaum, who typically is the old angry guy yelling at the sky. Everybody is in line with that sort of behavior due to the fact that the Sorsby decision went down yesterday. He's eligible to play coming up this fall. Might be serving a two-game suspension, but there's now other steam out there that has a lot of ruffled feathers, a lot of drama across the college sports landscape with certain teams, certain programs saying, we're not going to play Texas Tech in anything. Here's Paul Feinbaum of the State of College Athletics after yesterday's Brendan Sorsby ruling.
College sports went to DEFCON 1 yesterday, and that's rare because the sport has gone so low in so many different circumstances. But everyone but Texas Tech officials were in unanimous agreement that this is one of the worst adverse rulings, because forget whether college players get paid and all the things that go along with it. This is about the integrity of what happens on a Saturday afternoon. And Brendan Sorsby bet on games while he was at Indiana. Remember, he went to Cincinnati. He is a transfer. He has not played a down for Texas Tech, and they maintain they haven't done anything wrong. They sent him to rehab. It's a great example for the youth of America, and you can stop laughing now over your cornflakes. But the point is, what happens now? The statement yesterday from the Big 12 commissioner was interesting because he really didn't say anything. And I believe that Brett Yormark is probably the only one left that can stop this. He can declare the Sorsby ineligible. Yes, it would be litigated, but at least somebody would stand up. Until now, no one has really done anything, especially this court in Texas.
And we'll wait and see. The NCAA will reportedly appeal that decision yesterday, looking to keep Sorsby sidelined. We don't know exactly about the future, if he's going to be permanently ineligible in the eyes of the NCAA, what they're going for. But Sorsby being eligible, they certainly are against as of yesterday. Adam Schefter, interesting thought process here on Brendan Sorsby's appeal to the NFL beyond the college game after what could be a nice season in Lubbock.
If Brendan Sorsby goes out and lights it up and is the best quarterback in college football, I'm going to guess that team's not going to be all that worried about it. And if he falls off this year, the way that some of the other quarterbacks who went into last season, who were thought to be top prospects that didn't turn out to be that way in their last year of college football, if he plays that way, I think it might be another red flag for teams. So I don't mean to oversimplify it, but I do think it'll be tied to a large extent his performance this year and how effective it is or isn't. I think it'll be an issue that a team would have no problem getting over and past if the guy's playing like a first-round talent.
That is really darn interesting from Schefter, because typically he is pretty darn honest about the restraint and the conservative nature of NFL ownership and the collusion banding together over certain situations and character concerns and criminal past or issues in a locker room or as a teammate, et cetera, et cetera. List goes on and on. Chris Canty says there's no way Brendan Sorsby will ever sign in the NFL. Complete other side of the spectrum for Canty.
If he's allowed to play, this is going to be his last year of high-level football. There's no NFL team that's going to touch this. Not this. I don't give a damn how good he is, because this is a can of worms that you just don't want to open up. So, yeah, this is something that every athlete is fully aware of. This is something that is spelled out in the NCAA bylaws. I'm shocked that we have this ruling. I can't imagine that this helps Brendan Sorsby in terms of what his ambitions might be in high-level football beyond college.
And again, hammer on the head right there with Canty's take, because you think about the integrity issues that we have with the Brendan Sorsby situation. Betting on your own team in any capacity, very frowned upon. Betting on your own sport in any capacity, used to be very frowned upon. Betting at all, frowned upon. Obviously, can of worms, it's addicting. You get, you lose a bet, you want to put more money in, make your money back. It goes on and on and on. And certainly with respect to gambling addiction, which is real, and certainly very respectful of that situation with Brendan Sorsby. But that being said, if you're the National Football League and Brendan Sorsby is an above average quarterback this year, let's just say this all clears up and people play Texas Tech. They go on a run. They go to the CFP, Sorsby, and let's say they bow out in the semifinals this year. And Sorsby has a great year, Heisman finalist caliber season. In the NFL, they might say, okay, the player, really draftable guy. Now, the person, the past, do we want that person in the NFL? Do we want them on our franchise? And if you're Roger Goodell and somebody that has had brush-ups and run-ins with players in his league already gambling or placing bets on anything from a team facility, they're suspended for a year, suspended for life, indefinitely, 6-8 games, depending upon the situation. And Brendan Sorsby's coming into the league, and we've already had in the NBA reports of people owing people money, people underperforming or overperforming on prop bets and tipping people off. It's an ugly scenario. Integrity, competitive integrity is completely and totally in question in a lot of those cases, and we don't want it to be tarnished any further. To me, it feels like Chris Canty's right. I don't think the teams and the league in general will have an appetite for that, even if it is a reclamation project, which, again, to be admired for Brendan Sorsby. Nobody's rooting against Brendan Sorsby here. We're just pointing out what he did was really, really wrong and used to be until yesterday absurdly against the rules of college sports, against the rules of pro sports, and something that you certifiably do not do. There's nobody out there save maybe really bad people that are saying, Brendan Sorsby, I can't wait for this dude to suffer. Hope his life falls apart. No, that is a horrifically bad take. But what people are defending and what people are saying is I want the sport I love and know so well to stay really darn great and to have competitive integrity. So, yes, you can talk about all the different angles of this, but it is not about punishing Brendan Sorsby and derailing his career and messing with his future prospects. Certainly, he made decisions that proved to be pretty darn bad ones, got caught for it, went to rehab, is back, and now eligible as of today. And we'll see about an appeal from the NCAA. They will appeal, but we'll see about the result of that legal action in the days, weeks, and months ahead. Over to the remainder of the scorecard, D1 baseball is shaped up into the 8-team field for the College World Series. Yesterday, Alabama finished the job against St. John 7-2, and Oklahoma beat Kansas 13-2. The Sooners and the Tide are in the field, 8-team field for this year's College World Series. Action will begin on Friday, Troy in West Virginia, 1 o'clock. 6 o'clock Friday night, Ole Miss in North Carolina, and on Saturday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Oklahoma and Bama face off. And 7 o'clock Saturday night, Texas and Georgia. Full bracket, schedule, history, storylines, and more. Put up a preview this morning at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. Well, there's been a lot of big additions, coaching staff and roster-wise, for USD Coyote men's basketball this offseason. And yesterday's news may have been, maybe, the biggest. South Dakota men's basketball head coach Eric Peterson has announced the addition of, doing my best on the name here, Kajis Kublikas to the upcoming roster. The 6'2" guard transfers in from the University of the Pacific with 1 year of eligibility remaining. But most notably about the player is that he was previously at the University of Florida for 3 seasons and was part of the Gators team that won the NCAA national championship. Kublikas appeared in all 33 games for the Pacific Tigers last year, made 9 straight starts from November 24th through December 28th, averaged 6 points, 3 assists per game, and was second on the team with 100 assists on the year. So that being said, again, everybody's got their wayward, interesting journey in college sports these days. Regardless of sport, especially basketball and football, there's guys that have been on 3 programs in 3 years, 4 programs in 4 years, 5 programs in 5. Kublikas is on to program number 3. Certainly had the skill set and the acumen to be a recruit at the University of Florida, and that should be a big get for Coach Peterson and the Yotes. That news available at GoYotes.com. We will take a break. When we come back, a lot to get to, a lot to react to last night in the NBA Finals. We have a Game 5 guaranteed, as that series will be heading back to San Antonio for Game 5 following the Spurs' win last night in Game number 3. What do we take away from it? What about the post-game narrative spun by the Knicks and by the Spurs? We'll dive into that, a look at the odds and more. Also, NHL talk around the corner before we finish the show. Talking football and delivering the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's coming up next on this Tuesday, June 9th edition of Overtime, right here on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
You want more of Overtime? It's all on the podcast. Free with the app or online at ESPN Sioux Falls. Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Tuesday, June 9th edition of Overtime. You just heard the weather forecast, 105 degree heat index, which means it's ice cream time. Step into something delicious right now. Quickstar's Heartland Ice Cream, the newest scoop in the Nature's Touch ice cream family, with 12 different enchanting flavors to discover today at your local Quickstar. You can get into a pint for just $3.99, but before your first bite, make sure to keep an eye out for the Golden Scoop over the summer. If you find it, you could win an ice cream factory tour, fun merchandise, and free ice cream for a year. That's right, free ice cream for a year. Every scoop just got so much more magically sweeter. Full details at quickstar.com/sweepstakes and find the Golden Scoop and win only at Quickstar. By the way, get your hands on that Quickstar Quick Rewards app. Also, order ahead on the app. Select order ahead in your Quick Rewards app. Order and take care of the payment ahead of time and pick it up right there as soon as you can. Orders can be picked up in store or brought to your car curbside. You can order all of your Quickstar favorites from fried chicken to pizza, take-home meals, and of course, ice cream as well at your local Quickstar. Let's dive right into the NHL news of the day. The Los Angeles Kings are making a hire, and the Edmonton Oilers are nearing a hire. The Kings are hiring Peter Laviolette as their next head coach. Sources told ESPN just yesterday the 61-year-old is inking a three-year deal in L.A. He did not coach in the league last year after he was fired from the Rangers following 2 years. Laviolette has coached 1,594 games, which ranks in the top 10 all time. Destinations such as Washington, Philly, New York, Carolina, and Nashville also was considered for the vacant Maple Leafs and Oilers jobs this cycle. Peter Laviolette hired as the new head coach of the LA Kings. The Edmonton Oilers are getting close. Closing in is the report at ESPN.com on hiring Mike Babcock to be their next head coach. Babcock and the Oilers have been in talks to have him succeed Chris Knobloch behind the bench. The 63-year-old, who won the Stanley Cup in 2008 with the Red Wings, is 12th all-time in career wins by any NHL coach with 700. Babcock was last hired by Columbus back in 2023, but ended up never coaching a game with the franchise. He resigned after an NHLPA investigation into claims that he violated players' privacy when he asked to see photos on their cell phones. The NHLPA shared its findings with the league, which shared them with Blue Jackets management. Team president John Davidson said, "We got it wrong in hiring Mike Babcock. Hopefully the Oilers might get it right with Babcock this time around. We'll wait and see." ESPN.com on that latest news. And lastly, from the hockey world for now, Red Wings captain Dylan Larkin wants out. We told you about that yesterday, requesting a trade. Now he has requested a trade by submitting a 3-team list of desired destinations, and Minnesota Wild fans will want to get their ears perked up. The 29-year-old has a full no-trade clause as part of his contract, and his list was limited to being dealt to Vegas, Florida, and Minnesota. Has 5 years left on an 8-year, $70 million contract, which carries an average annual value of around $9 million. The trade demand comes after he just completed his 11th year in Detroit and his 10th straight without a playoff berth. The Red Wings' decade-long postseason drought now stands as the NHL's longest active run after the Sabres qualified for the playoffs for the first time in 15 years this year. Dylan Larkin, short list of trade destinations if he gets traded. Vegas, Minnesota, Florida, obvious on that list. Of course, yes, I want to play for a team that can make the postseason. Speaking of the postseason, things got pretty interesting last night between the Knicks and the Spurs. Game 3 at MSG, it felt like a shoe-in. People were ponying up thousands and in some cases over $1 million to be in the house, reportedly. Last night at MSG, the president was there, all sorts of celebrities there at MSG, but it did not go the home team's way. Facing a 2-0 deficit in the finals, the Spurs quietly clung to confidence, believing that if we play our brand of basketball, we'll be just fine, according to head coach Mitch Johnson. The visiting Spurs proved as much in a 115-111 Game 3 win over the Knicks on a chaotic Monday night at MSG, in which Area 51, composed of number 5 Stephon Castle and number 1 Victor Wembanyama, became the first pair of teammates age 22 or younger to each score 20 points or more in a finals game. Wemby had 32, Castle had 23, and certainly an impressive performance. It ended New York's 13-game postseason winning streak, and the Spurs duo combined for 55, their most in a game this postseason that didn't go into overtime. Wemby saying, I really tried to relax. He joined Tim Duncan as the only other Spur to score 25 or more in three consecutive finals game. The playoffs, it's a whirlwind. Hard to put your head out of the water. Sometimes I don't even have to watch the games back right away. I need some time off to let my brain cool down and recover as much for the body as for the mind. And that was an impressive win last night for San Antonio. Make no mistake about it. You can slice up a game any which way. You can talk about specific stats that make a difference. The most important part of last night to me was the hot start for San Antonio. Going up 11 after one, even though that lead immediately vanished at the beginning of the second quarter. Going up 11 on the road, hostile environment, everybody there saying, yep, kick the feet up, it's time for a sweep. This is pretty sweet, huh? Man, it's been forever since our Knicks got the job done. Oh, wait! There's still that alien on the other side in Victor Wembanyama, and he got the job done last night. And you might not be ready to say the Spurs are back in the series, but that was a major sign of life from San Antonio last night. It inspired everybody and also, of course, gives us some bonus basketball, minimum five-game series on the way between the Knicks and the Spurs. Speaking of New York, they did a lot of whining, particularly the head coach did a lot of whining post-game, credited the Spurs for winning game three, but he did not extend the same pleasantries to the officials. Brown pointed the finger at the stat sheet, which showed the Spurs taking three times as many free throws as the Knicks in the second half, as the Spurs escaped with a four-point win last night to cut New York series lead to 2-1. Knicks were in the penalty for the final 9-18 of the fourth quarter. Spurs held a 24-8 advantage in free throw attempts. Here is what Brown had to say. I talked to the officials. They outshot us 14-3 in the third quarter from the foul line. Talked to them, and they said, well, this is a foul. This is a foul, Brown said. That's the question I had with them is, you're right, maybe we did foul, but they fouled too. And this might be, and it is, a very much case-by-case scenario, but I got to tell you, one of the things that stinks lately about the NBA and basketball is there's always that excuse. Well, the refs, it was a close game, but that one call, this handful of calls, this disparity, that disparity, they didn't call this, but then they called that. It just gets old. And frankly, whether or not Mike Brown has a point or not is beside the point of the fact that we are at the stage of the postseason where just about, I don't know, I would say 50% of the losses suffered this year in the postseason, a coach is complaining about the referees in some form or fashion. Lastly, before we move on and get you your NFL dedicated segment of the day, followed by the good, the bad, and the ugly to finish up the show, let's take a look at your odds quickly here. Stanley Cup Final, Vegas is up 2-1. They're at home tonight, and assuming they handle the deal tonight, should be a even beefier favorite than they are right now. Vegas minus 185 to win the Stanley Cup. Carolina hanging around at plus 150. In the NBA, we saw a little bit of a balancing of the scales last night. Spurs are still in plus territory. Knicks are still in negative territory. New York minus 190. Spurs plus 160 following last night's road win for San Antonio. And lastly here, want to touch on the College World Series. College baseball making its way to Omaha. That begins on Friday, moves into more first-round action on Saturday. And you've got eight teams in attendance, as in every year. Georgia, North Carolina, Alabama, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Troy, West Virginia, and Texas. And here's a look at your odds. Georgia and North Carolina tied atop your best odds. Record-wise, smell test-wise, North Carolina is the best team remaining. But UNC and Georgia, plus 275, followed by Texas, plus 300. And if you're looking for pedigree, if that matters to you, in terms of teams that you'd like to wager on or teams that you're rooting for, Texas is by far and away the most accomplished winning program of the eight down in Omaha coming up later this week. Texas plus 300, West Virginia plus 750, and the remainder of the field, Ole Miss, recent champion just a few years ago, head coach Mike Bianco, then Alabama, Oklahoma, and Troy, the Trojans, the longest of long shots at plus 3,500 right now. Odds always subject to change and quoted courtesy of DraftKings Sportsbook. Again, the College World Series action beginning at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon. Troy against West Virginia, Ole Miss, North Carolina, 6 o'clock Friday night, Oklahoma, Alabama, 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon, and the final game of round number one of that bracket, Texas and Georgia, 7 o'clock Saturday night. That spread, that money line, even pick 'em between the Longhorns and the Bulldogs. Full preview, by the way, ESPNSiouxFalls.com. All the action in Omaha, some history and more in that article, ESPNSiouxFalls.com. When we come back, NFL chatter and the good, the bad, and the ugly to send you packing on a Tuesday edition of Overtime.
Stream us online, stream us on the app. Streaming now, Overtime with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up a fun Tuesday edition of Overtime. We moved up Vikings Thursday to today. Baker family off to Italy coming up later on this week. So a Vikings-based hour number one in the bag, available for you wherever you get your podcasts, ESPNSiouxFalls.com or on the free ESPN Sioux Falls mobile app. Let's get to the NFL talk of the day, followed by the good, the bad, and the ugly. Before we wrap it up here today on a Tuesday, we start down the road in Kansas City. The Chiefs are predictably reuniting with L'Jarius Sneed on a one-year deal that is worth up to $5 million. His agent, the Katz Brothers, told ESPN's Adam Schefter, reuniting the corner with his team that drafted him back in 2020. Chiefs, of course, traded Sneed after a franchise tag to the Titans in 2024, and the Titans ended up releasing L'Jarius Sneed back in March of this year in a move that saved the team nearly $11.5 million in salary cap space. The 29-year-old struggled to stay on the field for the Titans, appearing in just 12 games over the past 2 years. He signed a four-year, $76 million deal with the Titans after that trade and has not been a very good pair of seasons for L'Jarius Sneed. The good news is, back to where it all started, 2020 draft pick of Kansas City. Sneed now slides in, not as a starter, but a premium backup on that Chief defense. And if you're looking at reasons to still doubt Kansas City after a year in which they missed the postseason for the first time in forever, Pat Mahomes dinged and dented up. He'll work his way back. But the defense in Kansas City is an interesting case study here. You feel like at linebacker, Drew Tranquil, Nick Bolton, they're very solid. At pass rush with Felix Anadike-Uzomah, George Karlaftis, they're solid there. Spent a draft pick on R. Mason Thomas out of Oklahoma in the second round. And defensive line still anchored by Chris Jones. That's fine and dandy. That looks to be a pretty good defense there in Kansas City. But in the secondary, there's just a lot of questions here. At corner, you get Noel Williams, still a very young player. Mansoor Delane, top 10 pick this year, should be an immediate impact player. But outside of that, they've got guys that have come and gone from different places. Aloe Gilman, Kader Kohu, now L'Jarius Sneed. I hope it works out for Kansas City, but the secondary going to be a very interesting, debatable position group for Kansas City on the defensive side of the football. Good signing. We'll see exactly what L'Jarius Sneed has left in the tank for his former team, the Kansas City Chiefs, now back to being his current team in 2026. Well, it's been a bad rash over the last couple of weeks in the National Football League of alleged domestic violence incidents. That is now three, if you're keeping score. Broncos outside linebacker Jonathan Cooper, Packer running back Josh Jacobs, and the latest one is LA Rams offensive lineman Alaric Jackson. We'll get to that in a moment. Update on Cooper first. The outside linebacker of the Denver Broncos pleaded not guilty yesterday morning in a Douglas County, Colorado courtroom to misdemeanor domestic violence charges. The 28-year-old, who was arrested along with his girlfriend late Thursday night by police, will now have a motions hearing July 6th with the potential of a jury trial to start on July 22nd. Broncos are expected to open training camp later on in July. That is the latest on that Jonathan Cooper situation. Details and more info if you want it at ESPN.com. Now, Rams offensive lineman Alaric Jackson, this one, the newest news item of the three I mentioned moments ago. He was arrested for felony domestic battery on Monday night in Los Angeles. NBC4 reports that Jackson arrested around 11 p.m. after police were called to his home. The report said Jackson and a woman had an argument, and certainly more details if you'd like them. Pro Football Talk, NBCSports.com or ESPN.com. Another troubling situation out of the NFL. Well, one notable former Cleveland Brown is retiring. Former left guard Joel Bitonio officially announced his retirement today after 12 years spent in the league. The 34-year-old spent his entire career in Cleveland, which selected him at pick number 35 back in the 2014 NFL draft. Bitonio was a 7-time Pro Bowler, tied with Myles Garrett for the fourth most in team history, also a first-team All-Pro in 2021 and 2022. Here's what Bitonio had to say. Now that the job is finished, after 12 seasons wearing number 75, I have officially decided to retire. Bitonio's 178 starts are the most by any Browns player since the franchise returned to Cleveland in 1999. He was the longest-tenured player on the team until his contract voided in March, making him a unrestricted free agent, and Joel Bitonio hanging up the cleats other than pursuing other opportunities this offseason. Well, crisis averted, at least we think, for the New York Giants. Second-year edge rusher Abdul Carter left practice early yesterday during the first day of mandatory minicamp due to an ankle injury. Carter took off his cleats, walked off the field early in practice, and did not return. Giants' initial diagnosis is that the injury is minor. Head coach John Harbaugh saying, looks like he twisted his ankle to some degree and does not look serious. New York banking on Carter to have a big season after he was the number 3 pick in last year's NFL draft out of Penn State, had just 4 sacks in an up and down rookie campaign, saw him benched twice for being late or missing meetings. Abdul Carter, a turned ankle and not overly serious as of yesterday from Giants OTAs. Now, in case you're interested in things like this, the most popular player in the NFL, most lucrative jersey sales-wise, Josh Allen led the NFL in an important stat category last year. That is merchandise sales. The NFLPA has released information about sales of officially licensed NFL gear between March of 25 and February of 26, and Allen in Buffalo comes in first place for the most merchandise sold. After Allen, the player with the second most merch sales was Patriots quarterback Drake May, Eagles running back Saquon Barkley, Seattle wide receiver Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and Commanders quarterback Jaden Daniels rounded out the top five. Give the defense some love. Packer linebacker, edge rusher, future Hall of Famer Micah Parsons led all defensive players in licensed merchandise sales for the third consecutive season. And lastly here, there's a few quarterback competitions in the National Football League this offseason. One of them, of course, is in Minnesota. And another notable one is down in Atlanta. The Falcons do not have a quarterback competition, according to ESPN, at least not yet, according to quarterbacks coach Alex Van Pelt. On Monday, Van Pelt said he believes there cannot be a true competition between Tua and incumbent Michael Penix Jr. until the latter is able to do all the things in practice that Tua can do. Penix is recovering from left ACL surgery in November and has yet to be cleared for 11-on-11 team sessions. Penix has been at practice, been doing 7-on-7s and indy drills more than some would have thought just 7 months after an ACL reconstruction. But the quarterback's coach, Alex Van Pelt, saying it's tough to have a competition when both guys aren't competing at the same level. It's hard, but it'll come. It'll happen at some point. Mike's done a great job of getting himself to where he is right now. Really impressive to take 7-on-7 reps and go out and compete. That's been great, but really, no competition until we can actually evaluate them equally. So that feels like, based on logic, that it's Tua's job to lose, at least early on in the offseason program. As we head into training camp, Tua's going to have a lot more banked reps, getting to know that offense. He's also a more veteran player. You feel like Tua might be the starter in Atlanta early on coming up this season. That's the latest news from the National Football League, centered up on the local element. Chiefs Broncos news to start that out. Time to finish up the Tuesday edition of Overtime with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Who's been the problem child today? Displayed their ugly side. Whined a bit too much and is now setting a bad example. Bert is calling out today's headline makers with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, anytime Caitlin Clark is in the news, you know it's a candidate for the good. Caitlin Clark was alone with the ball right in front of the logo with the game on the line yesterday. As frustrating as the season has been at times for Clark and the Fever, this was Clark's comfort zone, and the shot hit nothing but net. Clark's three-pointer with just over a second to go gave Indiana a 78-76 victory over D.C. last night and gave the 24-year-old star another signature moment following a rocky stretch at the start of year number three. Stephanie White, the head coach of the Fever, saying sometimes we take great players and certainly generational talent for granted. What she did was incredible for us. She's going to have many more moments like that. I know she is. And we needed that one tonight. Indiana was just 5-5 entering the game. Clark was filling up the stat sheet, but had not been shooting the ball well lately. Amid having to answer for a feisty sideline exchange with White and being the subject of perpetual online discourse, Caitlin Clark shining last night with a last-second three. Well, this good news out of a bad situation. Former Minnesota Twin outfielder Max Kepler, remember him, still serving an 80-game suspension for testing positive for a PED, agreed Sunday to a contract with Arizona for a prorated share of the $780,000 minimum and the chance to earn $500,000 in roster bonuses. Kepler can start a minor league assignment as of Wednesday when the suspension is scheduled to have 15 days remaining. If no Arizona games are postponed, he would be eligible to play for the Diamondbacks as early as June 25th at St. Louis. If Kepler returns to the major league roster on June 25th, he would receive roughly $396,000 in salary for the remainder of the season. Kepler, 33-year-old, hit .216 with 18 homers and 52 RBI with Philly last year, grew up in Germany, signed with the Twins at age 16 back in 2009, has a .235 career average, 179 homers during an 11-year big league career. Other good news to get to, Miles Russell, certainly not a household name just yet, but he was among two 17-year-olds who earned a spot at the U.S. Open as of yesterday. Still to be determined is whether Russell brings his caddy from the 36-hole qualifier, who is a household name, the son of three-time champion Tiger Woods, to Shinnecock Hills this week. Russell, the number 10 amateur in the world, survived a bogey on the first playoff hole and grabbed the fourth and final spot from the Florida qualifier. Charlie Woods is one of his close friends who had the same commercial agent and is following Russell to Florida State. Russell smiled when asked if he would have Woods at Shinnecock Hills, saying only, we'll see what he's doing, to be determined. And fun story there. Charlie Woods might not be heading to the U.S. Open as a golfer, but could be a caddy coming up in just a few short weeks. And lastly, the ugly situation is really darn obvious. It continues to percolate, the decision to rule Texas Tech quarterback Brendan Sorsby eligible from a judge in Texas roiled college sports, according to ESPN.com, with reactions ranging from doomsday predictions to informal chatter about Big 12 schools attempting to not play the Red Raiders this year. The reaction around college sports was nearly unanimous, with the idea of Sorsby playing next year after admitting to thousands of bets on sports, including 40 on his own team, representing the latest crossroads for an industry that has faced a dizzying number of them in recent years. Big Ten officials are expected to discuss in the upcoming days a league-wide mandate to not schedule Texas Tech in any sports in the regular season. That's according to three different Big Ten sources. That came in the wake of Nebraska Athletic Director Troy Dannon telling ESPN that his school's teams are not allowed to schedule the Red Raiders. The Big 12, in which Texas Tech is a member, Their athletic directors are set to have a conference call today with Commissioner Brett Yormark, according to sources. And in a statement made to ESPN, Yormark confirmed meetings will occur this week. It's unknown how much purview the league would have, as the judge's ruling is law. The facts, according to ESPN.com, the facts of the Sorsby case have been well established. The NCAA was alerted to Sorsby's gambling back in March. So worth noting, Sorsby did not turn himself in. He got caught in regards to these gambling allegations and gambling proven activity. So law enforcement tipped off a sports book. Organization notified Texas Tech of their investigation in April, and Texas Tech deemed Sorsby ineligible after he admitted to having a gambling addiction and, to his credit, went to an in-person rehab center. While Texas Tech worked through the process of attempting to get Sorsby reinstated, the quarterback got a lawyer and sued the NCAA back in mid-May, seeking an injunction that would prevent the NCAA from banning him. Sorsby acknowledged he had wagered at least $90,000 on pro and college sports over the last 4 years, including 40 bets on Indiana football when he was a freshman with the team back in 2022. You know, we learn a lot, and as a parent, you work to instill what's right and wrong, what's allowed, what's not allowed. And in college football and in sports in general, we generally have known if you gamble, you're out. Don't gamble. Don't mess with the integrity of the game. Just ask Shoeless Joe Jackson and the 1919 squad there. That still is an issue. Pete Rose, an issue. Now Brendan Sorsby, the latest big name, roiled up in this whole thing. And frankly, we don't have a great solution as to where to go from here. To me, Texas Tech, the football program, could make an easy decision and say, you know what? We appreciate it. You're eligible. Good for you. We're going to distance ourselves here. We wish you nothing but the best. We've supported you. We'll continue to support you. That is always an option. We'll see exactly what ripple effects and ramifications that potential decision could make. But I'm curious, definitively, the SEC, the ACC, the teams within the Big 12, the Big 10 squads, who's going to pony up and play Texas Tech this year and Brendan Sorsby? We will have to wait and see, and the ripple effects could be massive from this case. That's the good, the bad, the ugly. That is our show on a Tuesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And we will not talk to you tomorrow. We're off tomorrow with a work event back Thursday. We'll talk to you Thursday when the next edition of Overtime rolls around right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.